Fritz had backed up a foot, giving him that much slack in his rope. Not that he could do anything about it. A ghost appeared over Gus. It pulled on his rope bonds, testing them. Then it stepped back and tossed something over his naked form, blinding him.
"Here you are," Murray spoke. "Got that top down?"
Como asked, getting out of the truck.
"Right here." "Yeah, that should be enough. Not like he's going anywhere."
"You're too kind, RJ," Murray said.
"I know, right? Fuck it. He's still a man. That'll keep the snow off him until we decide what to do with him. You hear that, Fireboy? We're debating your fate. You be good now, and maybe, just maybe, we'll cut you loose in the morning."
Murray chuckled, and Gus agreed with him. There was no fucking chance of being cut loose. Gus squirmed under the tarp, the heavy plastic crinkling as he moved.
"In case you're wondering, it's about 4 or 5 degrees out right now," Como said. "Might dip below zero. Might. Of course, I'm no weatherman. The weather's made a liar of me before. Hell, you might be buried under a foot of snow come morning."
A boot stepped on the tarp.
"Best curl that up around you if you can. Tuck yourself in case the wind picks up. See you in the morning. See you, Fireboy."
Gus set his jaw in an effort to stop its chattering. He listened for a moment, hearing the voices drift away. His wrists were crossed over each other, and just moving them wrung a gasp from him. His feet were a different matter entirely. They'd tied that rope tight enough to forever leave its print in the skin there, provided he ever got the rope off. After hanging from his wrists for most of the day, Gus pulled his arms into his body, wiggled upon the coarse turf, and took one deep breath as comfort, comfort that he wouldn't get from that night's bed. Though shivering, bleeding, and lying in his own filth, he was still alive. And tomorrow was another day. Chapter 19. The night was torture. Gus dozed at times, but only until he woke from violent bouts of shivering or sharp pain. His crotch burned from his urine, feeling like a tea bag that had partially frozen. During the night, the wind had picked up, making the edges of the tarp crackle with movement. Gus didn't have the strength to lift his legs, as they were still tied to the tire rim, so every now and again, a cold draft lifted his only sheet and rudely tickled his legs. His sinus cavity oozed mucus that he snorted down his throat and swallowed, his only meal of the day. The pebbled ground only punished him more. At some point, Gus lost track of time. Then morning found him, cold and bitter and trembling. Voices surrounded him, but none approached, giving him hope that maybe they had forgotten about him. Or maybe they were just getting ready for an execution.
"So, RJ, what are we going to do with this shithead?"
Murray asked, sounding tired of having Gus in the camp.
"What's wrong with just keeping him here?"
Como wanted to know.
"He's starting to stink up the campground here."
"You can't smell that?"
Prout asked. A pause in the conversation.
"Yeah, he is smelling a bit ripe," Como admitted. "Suggestions?"
"I say we drive him out to the lights and keep an eye on him,"
Prout again.
"Do some fishing. See what's biting."
"Not a bad idea. We could do one of them Mexican piñatas," Murray offered. "That'd be fun." "You're sinking to bowls level now."
"Well, fuck it, I don't know,"
a frustrated Murray exclaimed.
"Let me shoot him then, if you want to be all humane and shit. Hell, if it's up to me, I'd just as soon stick a knife in his ear and rotor root it."
"And you worked at a bank in a previous life?"
Como asked with mocking disbelief.
"Yeah, what bank was that again?"
Prout asked.
"A branch of Fuck You Incorporated?"
"Fine, you guys do what you like then," Murray muttered. "I'm keeping out of it."
The wind fluttered the tarp blanketing Gus, then someone yanked it off. Though it had provided little heat, its removal set off a bout of violent shivering. He instinctively tried to pull his knees in, but the rope around his feet stopped him.
Man, oh man, Como snarled in distaste. You shit yourself last night? Jesus. Got a feeling any fudge he might be holding onto is frozen, Prout said with a cruel grin. Any frostbite? Murray asked, and Gus squinted at the goggles-wearing man. Wasn't cold enough for that, Como said, and screwed up his face. Maybe only zero last night, if that. Give it a day or two, though. The cold'll come back. Gotta be below zero for a bit before anything freezes, or below -10 for a few minutes, and by a few, I mean like 20 or so. He's chilled, Prout observed, but not stirred. Right, Fireboy? His boot nudged Gus in the ribs like a knob of grit-crusted ice. Fuck me, he does stink, Murray said. Christ, RJ, he sure as hell ain't no goddamn air freshener. That fresh pine scent left him long ago, Prout sneered. All right, Como cut in. You guys wheel him on down to the lights and then drive on back. Como studied Gus, a sympathetic smile covering his face. Well, this is where our paths part. As you figured out, we talked it over and came to the conclusion that it's just too damn much of a risk to keep you around. You might get feeling vengeful or something like that later on. Can't have that. And you do smell like shit. Not sure if that's fear or just plain old B.O., but you stink. Anyway, bullets are a little scarce these days. So you'll understand if we don't shoot you outright. He moved in closer until his boots were a foot away from Gus's head. Just so you don't think we're total bastards, you're going to sleep for the next bit. Como soccer kicked Gus in the side of the face. In the dark, a place Gus was growing fonder of every time he visited, pain didn't exist. There was a sense of stretching at times, of pulling, but never anything that lingered. Once he believed he was floating, or attempting to, but his feet prevented him, keeping him close to Earth. That was a bit disappointing. When the world was real, he enjoyed flying, though he'd only done it twice. Both times he flirted successfully with the female flight attendants. Those memories he kept tucked away for days when he wasn't feeling very good about himself. Someone spoke in an alien language and others chuckled, the sounds reaching him like an old record playing at the slowest possible speed. Then he realized he was back, face down and hanging from the tow truck once again. The wind grazed his skin, and he lifted his chin and looked around. Como was walking around to the cab of a pickup. Murray and Cam Ball were up in the back. Murray had his goggles on and was grinning nastily. Ball wore a disappointed frown. Sorry, Bull, old man, but go butt-fuck yourself anyway. Murray held up his sidearm and fired three quick shots into the air while shrieking a high-pitched yodel. Bull reached up and pulled the man's gun arm down, speaking words that were lost in a squeal of tires on pavement. The pickup's engine sang, strong and willing, bearing its passengers away. Gus watched them shrink, down a length of highway toward the overpass in the distance, perhaps 300 or 400 meters out. Yellow grassland surrounded him, swaying hypnotically. At its heart was a crossroads of pavement. A single set of traffic lights dangled just overhead. They had parked the tow truck right in the center of the intersection. Gus pulled at his bonds and saw that they'd been tied with a fresh length of rope. The tire rim pulled his feet to the ground. He still had a little bit of wiggle room, just not enough to do anything helpful. He inspected himself, still pretty much naked, with only a soiled pair of drawers covering his naughty bits. He still hurt, but just being out of that wagon circle of motorhomes lifted his spirits considerably. The notion withered almost as soon as he realized what the gang of highway bandits had done to him. They'd brought him out to this crossroads for a reason. Most certainly a bad one.
Gasping at the pain flaring in his shoulders, Gus swung himself to the right and left, seeing only long strips of gray highway and the unmoving metallic husks of cars decorating it. Sunshine made their rooftops twinkle. He raised his feet off the rim, only an inch, and felt his body weight pull on the overhead boom. There he hung, shoulders screaming, until he squeaked defeat and stood once more. He yanked on his overhead bonds, weakly at first, but with growing fury, all to no avail. Gus panted, his eyes watering, and looked around again. There had to be a way to free himself. He couldn't go out this way. The pickup had reached the campground and disappeared around a trailer. "You fuckers," Gus hissed with frustrated venom. "You goddamn evil-hearted sons of bitches." The wind blew tenderly across his face, ironic for such a day. The part of the boom where his hands were tied drew his attention. A tight-looking knot lay to one side of his left hand, like a filthy bow on a grubby present. His fingers twiddled with the knot, twanging the cut ends. Gus tried twisting his wrist to get a better grip, but felt the fibers cut into his skin, refusing him. A gasp left his lips, and he growled, shaking in rage enough to make everything hurt. Then he screamed. Gus howled in the morning air. He rattled about, thrashing against his bonds. His mouth felt like a dried wash rag, but water still leaked from his red-rimmed eyes. He pulled again on his wrists, fiddled in growing frustration with the knots, unable to grip them and furious because of it. He bellowed in angst again before he relaxed and stared with raw hate at the distant overpass. "Sons of bitches! You rat fuck cocksuckers, you diseased fuck twats! I hope you fucking roast in hell, you bunch of evil shit stains! You hear me? Huh? You hear me, you goddamn praying pack of sick, depraved fucks!" Gus screamed again, long and hard, tapering off into a series of angry whimpers. Part of him wanted something to put a bullet in him and just end the game. Maybe that's what Como had in mind. They had the firepower to do so. The same rifles that had forced him off the road would let the air out of him like a pellet gun round through a water balloon. Then he went berserk. He shook and raved, calling them every dirty, offensive name in his vocabulary, insulting their mothers and fathers, their wives and girlfriends, their boyfriends. He called them back, challenging them to a real fight. He dared them to stop holding each other's dicks and come back. They could even use knives if they liked, and he his bare hands. He screeched and twisted and pulled with an energy that took him along like a monstrous wave about to crash down on a rocky shore. Then it did. Gus let his chin drop and felt the anger slowly ebbing away into despair. Why the fuck had they done this to him? There weren't any deadheads around anymore. Not like there used to be anyway, so why? Target practice. He was going to be the recipient of some Full Metal Jacket tickles in a few minutes, guaranteed to thrill and eventually kill. "Do it," Gus panted, shaking in disbelief, feeling infectious heat in his body for the first time since they shot him off the road. He glared at the overpass, too far to see any movement on the heights. They could be dancing jigs up there for all he knew, or drinking coffee. "Do it." The scene didn't change. Nothing showed that anyone or anything had heard him, and that disappointed him almost to the verge of breaking. "Do it," he whispered miserably. Anything to be free of this life. He'd given it his best shot, done what he could do with what he had. He apologized to Maggie and Becky and Chad and hoped that wherever they were, they'd get by as best they could. His thoughts drifted to leaving the farm in search of Talbert, recalling how he hadn't wanted to, not for that guy. Adam had convinced him to go, and that set into motion the chain that killed him and torched the farm. The farm. The best little place he'd come to know since the zombies had arrived. Gone. His thoughts flowed in a circular current right back to where he was, hanging like a slab of Donair meat out in the middle of nowhere, waiting for someone to slice a strip off his hide. Gus arched his head back, sniffled at the cold sun, and just waited. A scream jerked him awake. He gasped as if breaking the surface of a deep swimming hole, blinking like a man who'd been underground for a month. A long, piercing cry of sheer, thrill-seeking delight spiked the stillness, coming from the direction of the overpass. The sun was past its zenith, and Gus squinted, trying to make sense of the single startling note. He glanced around and saw nothing. However, a tingling settled into the base of his neck, turning his head back to the right. He still heard nothing, but that little buzzing wouldn't stop. He strained against the ropes, twisting his body and neck as far as they could go, the ache in his joints growing. Hearing the faint clip-clop of boots, a drunken tap dance of doom approaching from behind him, Gus held his breath. The sound paused for a moment, but then continued in a dragging scuffle, as if that one stop had rusted the joints of the walker. Gus's eyes widened. He cranked his head around, expecting the crack of vertebrae. Then he spotted it. He realized with sinking horror why the watcher from the overpass was screaming his head off. Gus chuckled darkly, perhaps even a touch insanely. Moseying into the very outer rim of his peripheral vision, a shadow swayed. Gus closed his left eye to better focus his right, as fear crashed over him in a freezing wave. Dark forest camouflage clothes covered the figure. It came on very slowly, as if each step was upon shattered ankles and sparking the utmost agony, and when Gus heard its low moan, his breath crystallized in his throat, and his scrotum tightened. A deadhead. One deadhead, but Gus figured it would eat like a family. Well, shit. Another cry of delight flared from the overpass. Gus cowered from the undead creature and the yells from whoever was watching. That realization struck him cold, and he stared in that direction. They were watching. You sick bastards, Gus muttered, flabbergasted at their depravity. He'd met a few assholes in his time during the apocalypse, but this sank them all. Sick, twisted fuckheads. He strained to see over his right shoulder, muscles protesting. The gimp took its time traversing a line that would cross the highway. It ignored the traffic lights. Gus's flesh broke out in a sweat he didn't believe possible. Like some evil, diseased scavenger creeping out of its hole, the corpse shambled toward him. Gus no longer felt like shouting. He silenced himself, suddenly hoping the underworld fright might miss him and just wander on by, oblivious to the sacrificial snack. He closed his eyes and waited. Then he opened them. The gimp was still on course for the tow truck. Fuck, Gus gnashed and looked at his wrists. He pulled back on them with whatever strength he possessed, feeling the rope cut into his skin. Any moment he expected blood to dribble over the bonds. He bared what teeth he had remaining, shook his arms as if that might help, and lifted his legs up from the bald rim, hoping the extra weight might bring results. Nothing. Gus wheezed and glanced over his shoulder. The gimp waltzed across the highway as if gutshot, boots scuffing raw asphalt. It wore a soldier's kit, but what really chilled Gus's guts, what really made his balls go cold, was the vest protecting the chest and the helmet covering the head. A military-issue pot helmet rested upon its skull with a visor slapped down over its upper face, masking its nose and eyes. He could see the mouth, could see it hanging open. Sweet Jesus, Gus whispered in panic. He freaked out. He exploded in a bout of frenetic thrashing, twisting his body in every direction, hoping to work himself free or break the ropes. The skin around his wrists finally broke, and bright blood beaded over, some drops lining his arms all the way to his shoulders. He pulled, joints screaming at him to stop, until his last reservoir of strength drained empty and left him spent, panting, and still hanging. A few drops of blood fell from his triceps to the ground. Gus checked the whereabouts of the gimp. His breath caught in his throat. The undead stood at the corner of the tow truck, leaning against the metal as if having a smoke, its dusty visor gleaming in the overhead sun. A grimace of green-black teeth appeared waxen until the thing moved its jaw. Something dark and sluggish shifted within the shallow cave of its mouth. Then Gus smelled it, a pungent cloud of spores that bypassed the combat uniform clothing the zombie, and simply breathing that filthy air made him feel infected. The softest moans seeped from his throat. The undead gimp rolled itself around the corner of the truck and almost stumbled, giving Gus a fleeting flare of hope where there wasn't any. Then the creature coolly righted itself and staggered toward Gus.
"Jesus," Murray said from where he stood with his binoculars, his mouth morphing between a twisted smirk and a grimace. "After all this time and them fuckers still creep me out."
"What's it doing now?"
asked Prout, leaning in and holding out a hand for Murray to relinquish his set.
"Just standing there."
"Huh?"
"He's just standing there," Como said, holding the only other pair of binoculars to his eyes. "Just sizing him up, like he's inspecting a fucking buffet or something."
That rendered the other men speechless. The entire pack of them stood behind the makeshift gun ports of the overpass, nestled between a scattering of derelict cars and spike strips, casting their attention at the not-so-horrific ending of their most recent prisoner.
"They do that?" Cam Bull rumbled at his leader. "I mean, can they do that?"
"This one is," Como reported, adjusting his focus.
"Maybe it's just tickled with having a last meal or something,"
Edgar proposed and was ignored. No one really paid him any real attention at the best of times. Como secretly debated shooting the man outright just to spare the rest of them from his annoying attempts at humor. He still might, and he wondered if Edgar's buddy Prout would come to his defense. Those days' numbers meant strength, and Como realized killing his own wasn't effective management of human resources. But goddamn, he was tempted at times.
"Now what the fuck is it doing?" Murray asked.
His goggles were pushed back on his head, ogling the sun. Prout lost patience and snatched the pair of binoculars from the man, who merely scowled at the lack of manners. No one tried to take Como's.
"Looks like Fireboy is talking to the thing."
That drew stares of surprise from the others.
"The man's a fucking dead whisperer," Boone chortled. "People do that?" Cam Bull asked. "Seriously?"
"No, they can't fucking do that," Como snarled. "Jesus Christ, Bull."
"That zombie's got headgear on,"
Prout said as he focused on the situation.
"Maybe it can't bite for some reason."
"Helmet only covers the upper part," Como answered. "The mouth is free."
"So what's he saying to it?"
Como shrugged.
"Maybe it's a man."
That quieted the pack and made the others gaze intently in the direction of the tow truck.
"Can't be a man," Prout said. "I can see the hands. Look like they've been dipped in a full shit pot."
"I don't think it's a man either," Como agreed. "But Fireboy is sure as hell conversing with the thing."
"I could fire off a couple of rounds," Boone offered. "See if the dead fuck can dance."
"Nah, what will be. That's a zombie, and it could be the only one around for kilometers."
"Maybe it's just enjoying the sight before it digs in," Edgar said,
but no one took him up on his theory. Regardless, in the middle of nowhere, the helpless living and undying dead were facing off.
"What the hell is Fireboy saying?" Prout demanded. "Who can read lips?"
Grunts of derision answered that question.
"I know what he's saying,"
Edgar offered, a smile coating his words.
"Oh, fuck. Oh, shit. Oh, fuck, fuckity, fuck, fuck."
"You know," Murray said, rubbing at his nose, "once heard that actors who fill up the background of a scene, say if it's in a coffee place or restaurant, all they say is watermelon over and over to make it seem like they're having a conversation."
"I heard that too," Campbell said.
"Watermelon?" Boone asked. "Why fucking watermelon? Why not have a real conversation but just whisper it, or just mouth the words?"
"Sounds fucking retarded to me," Prout threw in. Only saying I heard is all. Hell if I know if it's true or not.
Watermelon, watermelon, Como muttered, standing tall and not dropping his gaze.
I call bullshit, Boone scoffed. Stupid. Watermelon.
It's because that one word works the mouth in all sorts of directions or something to that effect.
Once knew a woman who could do that, Murray said.
She was your sister, Boone snapped.
Ah, Como smiled under the binoculars before any further shots could be fired between his two companions. There we are. The zombie moved in and raised a hand to an exposed shoulder. Fireboy dangled and twisted and screamed at the touch, suddenly very much alive and very vocal. His lingering screams drifted across the open space of the grass fields, sounding very far away. The dead thing leaned in close to the twisting, turning prisoner, smothering the weakened man with an arm. Fireboy wailed as the zombie dipped its hard-shelled head to his wildly moving one. They struggled, like an old couple waltzing on an uneven dance floor, one partner visibly tiring, while the other slowly closed in, intent on delivering a very messy hickey. Then the blood sprayed, and Fireboy's wails of terror became squeals.
Mmm, good, Prout exclaimed, and held up his binoculars for anyone interested.
A genuine smile slid across Como's face. Chapter 20.
You okay?
The question left Gus slack-jawed stupid. He had to blink twice, and even then he wasn't sure of what was happening. He stared at the gimp before him and couldn't summon his voice, so instead he just hung there with his mouth open, stunned as if someone had hooked booster cables to his toes and frazzled his system. Huh, he finally got out. The zombie placed himself before Gus's dangling frame, and instead of coming forward and chomping into him, it merely stood and inspected. Or at least Gus believed it was inspecting. He couldn't see the eyes.
Said you okay?
The mouth worked stiffly as if the cold affected it.
You look like shit.
Gus balked.
You're not.
The gimp waited.
You're not gonna
eat you?
The zombie asked.
No, just the opposite. Gonna get you out of here, if anything. Think you can move?
I'm dreaming.
You're not dreaming.
You're a figment of my imagination.
Listen, the gimp said with deliberate clarity. I'm not here to kill you, okay? I'm going to cut you down from there. But we have to hold on for a minute or so.
A minute?
Yeah, just a minute.
Who the fuck are you?
The creature's pallid lips drew back, exposing those terrible black teeth cemented in place by a green, receding gum line. The horrid smile caught Gus off guard.
Clay Wallace, you?
Gus. Barry.
Well, Mr. Barry, offhand I'd say you're lucky I happened along here.
Gus snorted in disbelief.
You don't fucking say.
That caused Wallace to smirk with all the grace of a snake.
I do. The gunshots drew our attention.
Our?
My partner and I.
There's two of you?
Yeah.
Where is he?
Don't worry about that. Right now, eyes are on us, and we have to put on a show.
What?
Can you scream?
Gus didn't like the sound of that.
What do you mean? He asked warily.
I need you to scream. Just until I tell you to stop, okay? Scream like a dying man might. Someone who's being devoured by zombies.
The distrustful expression on Gus's face said it all. Wallace reached up and carefully undid the first three buttons of his combat shirt above his drooping vest. His hands were as filthy and bleached as those belonging to a fresh corpse. Every so often, bones crackled, but his fingers manipulated the buttons until a gap hung open. He reached inside and pulled forth a bottom of what appeared to be a squeeze bottle of ketchup.
Now,
Wallace whispered, stepping closer.
Don't freak out. Jesus, you stink.
Gus couldn't answer, still unable to discern if this speaking ghoul was real or not, and he didn't appreciate the thing getting closer. A memory of a dentist leaning in much too close with a poised drill came to mind.
You ready? Wallace asked, the visor considering.
Yeah, Gus said with unmasked dread, squirming to the right just as Wallace lifted a hand to his shoulder and made cold contact. Gus's innards twisted, revolted, as if being invaded by a knot of maggots, and any remaining mental fortitude burned away as that diseased maw drew closer. He screamed without prompting and yanked away as much as possible from the zombie's grip.
Good.
Wallace's voice sounded soothing.
That's good, but stay still.
Gus shrieked again, freaking out. The zombie's shocking mouth was far too much for him.
You're natural, the monster said.
Gus lost it entirely. But Wallace moved closer and hooked an arm around the man's neck, pulled his weakened form in close. The corpse leaned in, absorbing the frantic thrashings. He aimed the ketchup bottle at Gus's bare chest. The last thing Gus remembered before passing out were the helmet closing with his neck, those horrible teeth, and jets of red spritzing the air before his eyes. Como lowered his binoculars and mulled over what he'd just witnessed. The zombie had latched onto Fireboy's neck and opened it up, covering the hanging man in a mess of blood. In seconds, the screaming died away, and the man hanging from the tow truck went limp. However, something bothered the gang leader. The zombie wasn't right to him. It was gorging itself on its human lunch as others would have. If Como didn't know better, the thing appeared to be simply nuzzling Fireboy's neck. The binoculars were at their limits and didn't allow greater scrutiny, which meant he'd keep an eye on the feeding for a little longer, just to make sure. What's wrong? Boone asked. Como didn't answer him right away.
You got eyes on that corpse, Jack?
Murray had snatched the binoculars back from Prout and resumed watching the action.
Yep. What's it look to you? Honestly, looks like the two of them down there are necking.
Como shook his head.
That dead bastard hasn't really made any progress, has he?
Nope.
Something's wrong?
Edgar asked, scratching at the screaming eagle bandana cutting off his scalp circulation.
Something is, Como muttered. Just can't figure.
A suppressed burp flung Boone's stick-like figure over the gun ports. Edgar's head exploded in a messy plume of hair and skull fragments, the screaming eagle spurting free and flying like a bloody lasso falling to earth. Prout only half spun around when his chest burst open in a smoking spurt of red, a fine spray erupting from his other side. He grunted in surprise, and as he sank to his knees, Murray's cry of, "Hey!" was silenced by three more of those soft coughs as his torso slammed into the metal railing. The bodies slumped to the ground. Como dropped his binoculars and spun about to face a figure dressed in light green-brown camouflage and wearing a ski mask. A suppressed pistol was in the masked attacker's hand.
Wait!
Como got out as Campbell rolled to the side, pulling his knife free of its sheath. The man in black shot Como twice in the chest, backing him up against a nearby car door, before smoothly altering aim and firing twice more, tearing a chunk out of Bull's midsection and buckling him over. A third shot blew out the back of Bull's head in grisly streamers. Como lay against the car, holding a hand to one of his chest wounds and gasping as his blood flooded a lung and his heart bleated a code his brain recognized as dire. No more than 4 seconds. 4 seconds before, they'd all still been alive, shooting the shit while watching the circus on the crossroads from afar. Now, Como's darkening vision took in the slain forms of his companions as their killer walked toward them, pistol trained.
Careful, Como realized, close to blacking out. Quiet. Stealthy, his mind corrected, before shutting down.
Gus moaned and rolled his head to one side, repelled by the potent smell of vinegar. He rubbed his scruff of a beard before his arm flopped back to the pavement. A shadow passed over him, and he opened his eyes, grimacing at the bright flash of the sun. A moment later, he realized he was lying on his back, no longer bound to the tow truck. His arms buzzed with renewed circulation and moved haltingly, as if thawing after a long winter. Something moved just beyond his head, and he turned with some discomfort to see a man disappearing around the corner of the truck. Gus tried to sit up. Cramps seized his legs, and he winced at the biting pain rippling through his thighs and calves. His arms ached, but he could move them. Slowly. Dream. Had to be a dream. A delirious dream. But who would cut him down?
Hey, he called out. Who's there?
Silence. Then a metallic clatter of something bouncing.
Hey, what's happening?
He rolled onto his belly, wondering why the hell he was coated in spoiled ketchup, and saw boots underneath the truck on the driver's side. Whoever wore them stood on the balls of his feet, leaning into the vehicle. Pebbles stuck to Gus's belly and chest, and lying down as he was, he felt the clingy saturation and burn of his undershorts. That wrenched a sigh from his tortured form. Boot heels came down and moved back around the truck, distracting Gus from his aches. Whoever the guy was, he took his time coming around the truck, but he wasn't walking like a deadhead, and for that, Gus was grateful. The figure stepped into sight and towered over Gus, forcing him to look up, his face slackening into an expression of horror. That fish-belly-colored jaw and the face only half revealed by a lowered visor, the skeletal smirk and horrible teeth. A stiff hand rose and adjusted the helmet.
How you doing? The gimp asked.
Gus couldn't reply, and when he finally did, it was a heartfelt, holy shit. Silence stretched out after that sincere answer. The zombie ended it.
That a good holy shit or a bad one?
It wasn't a dream, Gus whispered, keeping the dead fucker in sight.
No, it wasn't. You're free to go. If you can walk, that is.
I can walk.
Well, that's a good thing.
Who are you?
Mr. Barry, we've covered introductions.
I mean, Gus's voice grated. Who the hell are you? And why did you... He couldn't say any more, overwhelmed by Wallace's presence.
I was a professional soldier, Mr. Barry,
Wallace stated, lips working as if fresh out of a dentist's chair.
Now I suppose I'm freelancing. Lucky for you, we came along when we did.
You're fucked up. That didn't merit a reply, so Gus tried again. I mean, you look like a zombie.
Well, you know what they say about looks, Mr. Barry.
Gus knew. He placed his hands flat to the pavement. With a growl and a surge of pain as if his guts were about to drop, he attempted to push himself off the ground, gave up, and struggled into a sitting position. His legs felt too stiff to support him just yet, so he sat and shook them out as if recovering from a far too lengthy stretch.
You take your time,
Wallace said and glanced in the direction of the overpass.
We're good here now.
What does that mean?
It means we're safe, relatively speaking. How many of those men were there? The ones that did this to you?
Six.
I see.
Are you a zombie? Gus blurted, fixing his rescuer with a harsh look. Wallace surveyed the land, and for a moment Gus wondered if he'd heard the question. The man's head bobbed oddly as if he were concentrating on listening.
Yes and no, he finally answered.
Yes and no? Well, what is it? But Wallace turned around and left him.
I'm heading over to that campsite. Climb onto the back if you want, and I'll drive you over.
The back? Why not the front?
Because you stink.
The driver's door opened.
That got Gus moving. He pulled himself up to the tailgate, his arms and legs on the verge of being torn apart. He stood on shaky legs and regarded the boom and winch system taking up the rear of the vehicle. Gus couldn't see a place to climb onto, so he waddled around to the passenger side, walking as if he wore plaster casts on both legs. The truck started up. Gus opened the passenger side door, sweating precious water he couldn't afford to lose, and hauled himself onto the seat. Wallace waited but didn't offer a hand or turn his head to watch. Groaning, grunting, Gus got himself tucked away and closed the door. He glanced at Wallace's intimidating profile before rolling down the window. Gus wasn't the only one who stank. The soldier put the truck into drive and rolled away from the crossroads, back toward the overpass. He drove slowly, his head again weaving in that erratic, odd fashion that reminded Gus of Ray Charles. But Wallace wasn't blind. Far from it. Gus rested his head against the doorframe and watched the planes roll by.
Taking your time, aren't you?
Some trace of civil politeness forbade him from further questioning his rescuer about his condition, which was totally fucked up in Gus's humble opinion. It felt like asking a terminal cancer patient how you feeling. Wallace focused on driving. His pale hands gripped the steering wheel, the skin tight and white around the knuckles. Gus directed his attention back to the road. Chapter 21. The tow truck pulled into the center of the ring of motorhomes, brakes squealing as it slowed to a stop. The leather recliners remained situated in front of the white and tiger-striped blocks, waiting for cutthroats nowhere in sight. Wallace placed the gear stick into park and got out without a word, letting Gus stare after him in unchecked horror.
What is this guy? He's infected, but how can he function?
The fact that he didn't eat Gus while he was strung up proved the soldier didn't have the killer appetite of other zombies, but his appearance suggested otherwise. Wallace ambled around the front of the truck, allowing Gus to inspect him at length. He didn't move well, as if every joint was afflicted with arthritis, or he'd been shot in the ass and couldn't be bothered to dig the bullet out.
"Get him?" a woman called out, breaking Gus's study of Wallace.
He leaned forward, looking into the side mirror. There, between two RVs, sauntered a figure clothed in camouflage gear, complete with ragged body armor, tactical webbing, and assorted pouches. A sidearm rested in a hip holster. A black ski mask completely covered the face.
"He's in the truck?"
the woman asked, and Gus took a moment to realize the approaching soldier had spoken.
"Yeah," Wallace answered. "How many you get?"
"Six."
"That checks out. Anything useful on them?"
She stopped and shook her head.
"A bunch of knives, some Glocks, a couple of high-powered hunting rifles up top, but nothing special. Debating even taking them along."
"You know the answer to that."
"Aye, that," she said, and looked into the mirror, causing Gus to flinch a bit. "The bad people are all dead and gone now. You getting out or staying in?"
Her voice was harsh and gruff, as if she'd been screaming for a very long time. Gus had to prompt himself to answer.
"Still a little stiff here."
"And more than a little ripe," Wallace commented.
The ski mask regarded the motorhomes.
"Stay there, then. I'll check out the showers, see if we can't get you cleaned up. These fuckheads had a pretty sweet setup here. I'd be surprised if the showers aboard these beasts don't work. You could even get one if you like," she told Wallace.
"I'll stick to deodorant."
Whether she smiled or not, Gus couldn't tell, but Ski Mask nodded before walking off toward the tiger-striped motorhome with the barest of feminine swaggers. She placed her back next to the RV's side door and gripped her sidearm. Though all the gang members had been killed, she still practiced caution. In a flash, she threw it open, scanned the interior from one angle then the other, and went inside. Though he didn't feel up for it, Gus opened the door and slid out of the truck, grimacing at every movement. The mobile home trembled at times, shivering at Ski Mask's probing.
"Anything else you want to tell us?" Wallace asked.
Huh?
Gus blurted, taking his attention off the one woman sweep and clear in process.
Anything else you want to tell us?
No, I didn't really see anything else. Too fucked up. Far as I know, there were only six of them.
So you said. That's going to leave a scar.
Gus glanced at the crusted over cut gracing his ribs.
Yeah, guess so.
All clear,
Ski Mask informed them as she emerged from the doorway.
Go get that shower, buddy, unless you prefer to stand around in your undershorts.
You best check him out, Collie,
Wallace said, sizing up the encampment.
Mr. Barry has a nasty laceration on his ribs there.
Don't have to call me Mr. Barry all the time, Gus muttered. First name will do.
But Wallace showed no indication of hearing him.
That does look nasty, Collie said as she walked over to Gus. Looks clean enough, just nasty. Unfortunately, I'm out of all the cool, quick-healing stuff, so it'll be plain old catgut for you.
She stopped before the bearded man and briefly met his gaze. Though her mask hid her face, her blue eyes stunned him like a jolt of adrenaline. It wasn't as though Gus had never seen blue eyes before. He never really cared for them. But never had he seen a pair of blinkers so damn bright, so frightening in their marble brilliance. He wondered if she hadn't had them laser polished at some point before the apocalypse. A sprinkling of crow's lines, a tattoo perhaps, encircled the skin around her right eye socket and stretched back, disappearing beneath the edge of the mask. If Collie noticed his inspection, she didn't show it. She scrutinized his cut.
Bet that stings. Not much I can do now. Gonna leave a mark, though. Good news is they didn't cut any arteries, else we wouldn't be having this conversation. Head on in there and get yourself cleaned up. Wash around the cut, but don't disturb the scab, and I'll do the rest. Find some fresh clothes. Whoever owned that rig also had a washer in there. I swear, if that thing is any indication, they were living in luxury out here. Big TV, hollow set, king-size bed, washer, dryer. The fucking thing even has a goddamn bar. I'm thinking we should seriously consider driving it off into the sunset.
Wallace kept his thoughts on the matter to himself.
I'm Collie, by the way,
she said, not offering her hand.
Gus.
Hi, Gus. Glad to see you're still alive. Why don't you head on in for that shower now?
Yeah, sounds like a good idea.
Collie's startling eyes flashed back with the glaring intensity of spotlights, but only for a second, before she started speaking to Wallace, going on about the motorhome's upscale interior. Their conversation dimmed as Gus staggered on stiff legs toward the open doorway. He almost passed out as he climbed the steps into the rig, and he floundered on a length of sofa fixed to a wall. When his senses stabilized, he rolled onto his side and stared like a druggie coming down off a high. It was nice inside the trailer. A kitchen area with seating for two was right at his head. Lacquered wooden panels lent a cozy ambience to it all. The door to a small bathroom, and Gus assumed the shower lay straight ahead, and he stared at it longingly.
Still alive.
Almost 2 years of pretty much nothing had led up to a few days of hellish close calls. He pulled himself to a sitting position and used whatever knobs, tables, or chairs were handy to get himself into the shower. The RV's door remained open, and Gus cursed it for being so. His shorts dropped to his ankles and nearly tripped him as he entered the bathroom. It was tiny, but since it actually had a clean-looking shower, he didn't complain. The shower had dripped, so the plastic floor squeaked just a bit when he stepped in, eyeing the wall slot where a worn bar of soap rested. He had to stoop a bit to fit inside the stall, but that didn't bother him. A shower would make it all better. A blast of cold water made him gasp. He fumbled at a knob and the flow got warmer, flattening whatever scruff ringed his bald head and chin. He didn't know how long he had before the tanks ran dry, but he wasn't too worried about that either. The wall came to his shoulder, and he leaned against it, sinking his head to his chest in quiet thanks and feeling the hot water blast his back, working its curative magic on both flesh and mind.
Still breathing. Still kicking.
Since he'd survived this latest episode, Maggie and the kids had to be alive as well.
Had to be.
His ass hadn't been pulled from the fire for anything else. With a weary sigh, Gus reached for the soap and dropped it. He began to weep. 10 minutes later, he shut off the water just as it turned cold, and he stepped out of the shower, clean and composed. He toweled off with the one handy in the bathroom, taking care with the slash down his chest, and then shuffled into the bedroom, where a king-size bed dominated a very comfortable-looking area. Blankets neatly covered the mattresses, as if whoever slept there made the bed habitually. A sliding door at its foot was ajar, and Gus peeked in to see a washer and dryer combo taking up the closet space.
"Christ," he muttered, taking it all in.
He shuffled to a chest of drawers and opened each in turn. As much as he hated the idea of using another man's clothing, especially anything belonging to a member of the Toll Highway Gang, he needed something until replacements could be found. Luckily enough, the sizes weren't off by too much, and everything smelled surprisingly fresh. He pulled on a blue-striped button shirt that was a little too big, but not annoyingly so, and the black jeans he settled on could be adjusted with a leather belt. A plain brown sweater went on over his head, and he groaned as he bent to pull on thick socks. Once he finished dressing, he searched the remaining cupboards and drawers and located extra winter clothing and t-shirts for the summer. A separate closet contained an impressive hoard of skin magazines, which perked his interest for all of a second. Paperbacks and a few of his National Geographics were stacked on a night table. Gus didn't feel like any heavy lifting just now, so he left everything. He hobbled back out into the main area of the motorhome, his attention focused on a closet just off the kitchenette. The door opened at a soft tug, and a rack of rifles stared back at Gus's pleasantly surprised face, hunting rifles mostly, with an ample supply of ammunition stacked away on an overhead shelf. A pair of stainless steel handguns was stashed away at the base of the closet, and Gus pulled the twins out to marvel at their lines. Sig Sauer stamped the barrel, along with P-441. He felt nostalgic for the old Ruger and Benelli once in his possession. Gus recognized the Sauer brand, but the version of the pistol meant nothing to him. What did interest him were the stacks of loaded magazines held upright in a block of foam padding. 8 in all, of unknown capacity, with a Tupperware box containing a veritable bounty in loose shells. He lifted the plastic box and saw 3 cardboard boxes holding even more shells, an additional 50 shells all neatly tucked away and separated by molded plastic dividers.
"Baby, baby," Gus whispered,
the aches and pain of the last couple of days suddenly overridden by the shiny hand cannons. He pulled them out and held them up to the light, admiring their workmanship and lethal promise.
"I knew your cousins," Gus said quietly, inspecting the old-fashioned iron sights.
"All cleaned up?"
The voice made Gus jump, and he almost aimed the Sours. Wallace leaned into the open doorway, his lower face no longer smiling, the visor dull in the shade of the interior.
"I said, all cleaned up."
"Ah, yeah."
The visor didn't retreat.
"Found some pop guns, did you?"
"Yeah," Gus said with a toothless smile. "How about that, eh?"
"Seems these guys had a small arsenal lying around."
Wallace didn't appear the least bit concerned with Gus having the weapons.
"Fucking hey, they had a small arsenal. One of them blew me off the goddamn highway. Cheap-ass sniping sons of bitches."
The soldier didn't have anything to say to that, so Gus carried on.
"You found more guns?"
"Calm down there, Blinky,"
the soldier said in that even tone of voice, oozing zen.
"I think the general idea in situations like this is finders keepers, unless you absolutely need something. Like shoes, for example."
"They took my boots.
and whatever else I had in my SUV.
Well, they're still poking around. Maybe they'll turn up. In the meantime, maybe there's something here for you to wear on your feet. Until we can find better. And something to holster those pistols in. Take a look where you found those puppies. Maybe there's a tack vest or webbing around.
Gus glanced from the closet to the floor and spotted a cupboard underneath the sofa.
You're going to let me have these?
Don't see why not.
Jeez. I could be anyone, Gus started. You don't know, I mean, I couldn't.
The visor seemed to zoom in on him, and the toothy mouth below it hardened, as the temperature seemed to immediately drop 10 degrees.
You could do what, Civvy?
Wallace asked in a suddenly lethal tone that suggested Gus best not finish the sentence. Instead, he cleared his throat and studied his feet.
Nothing.
Wallace kept staring, making Gus more than a little uncomfortable.
Well, I didn't mean anything, you know, bad or anything.
Gus trailed off, but when he glanced back to the doorway, it was empty. Wallace was gone. Feeling the need for a fresh pair of undershorts, Gus limped to the door and watched the soldier amble toward another RV, the one Como probably owned. Wallace took his time walking away, not a care in the world, and Gus shook his head in disbelief at the strut.
Oh, no, I'm not just cool, he muttered, emphasizing the word and directing it all at Wallace's back. Heaven forbid, I'm the eye in ice.
Gus retreated inside. The cupboard gave up a new pair of sneakers. They were two sizes too big, but Gus wasn't picky at that point, and after a few strolls around the living area, he decided he wasn't about to fall over with them on. A second search of the gun closet revealed brown, worn leather shoulder straps with a pair of holsters and pockets for extra magazines. There weren't any suppressors like the ones he'd had before, but he was glad to find the accessories. One couldn't have everything. Gathering his things, he studied the leather straps and figured out they went across his back somehow. He fiddled with pulling them on and eventually got it right.
Oh, yeah, he breathed, impressed with himself, sticking his chest out and immediately regretting it as the cut over his ribs asked him none too kindly what the hell he thought he was doing.
The two stabs of pain felt like an indignant, hey, hey!
I hear you, Gus grimaced and placed a hand over his wound.
The sensation of bleeding reached his palm, and he lifted the sweater and shirt for a quick check, yet found nothing but the ugliest crusted over line. Hissing in discomfort, he stiffly walked out of the Winnebago and made his way over to the one across the way, where Wallace and the still-masked collie stood in the doorway, paused in their conversation.
Alive and well, I see,
collie observed, fixing Gus with those intense blue eyes.
Well, alive anyway.
Ollie here says you're in need of footwear, collie said.
Gus stopped about 4 paces away from the pair and fixed Wallace with a look that asked, Ollie? Not bothering to contain his smile. The visor and the bared teeth underneath seemed to frost over.
She gets to call me Ollie. You call me Wallace.
Gus nodded complete understanding before facing collie.
Yeah, a size 11 if you got it.
You're in luck, collie said and stepped out of the doorway. Go on in. Got some new guns there, I see.
Yeah.
Gus carefully lifted one arm to better show off the holster on that side.
Feel like a cop with it.
Looks good.
There's more over there.
More guns?
Rifles, mostly.
He shrugged with one shoulder.
I took the good ones.
To his surprise, collie chuckled.
We'll check it out. A little later.
I just want to say,
Gus shrugged.
Thanks for saving my ass. Really, appreciate it.
You're welcome,
collie said while Wallace's visor only stared at him. Having gotten that out of the way, Gus stepped into the Winnebago and gasped. Dry foods and other assorted goods crammed the interior, Racks of clothing, boxes of canned food, plastic jugs of water, winter outdoor wear, board games. Gus couldn't help but smile at seeing Monopoly. More boxes were labeled IMP and further divided into breakfast, lunch, and supper. There were even mason jars of preserved jams and meats, which Gus recognized from the farm. Then he spotted the boxes of Arctic Blue chilled vodka stowed away in a corner, and a familiar tightening of his throat returned.
"Holy shit."
"Something, eh?" Collie said, and rubbed at the corner of an eye. "These boys have been at this for a very long time, and they haven't been too nice about it either. Along with stringing you up, that white motorhome over yonder there had handcuffs hooked into the bed's baseboard. So I'd hazard a guess these pricks have had quite a few guests in the past."
Gus looked her in the eye.
"Any sign of kids? Or bodies?"
The dread in his voice wasn't lost on Collie.
"No, nothing like that. Of course, they could have done anything with regards to bodies. Dumped them somewhere."
"Oh.
But Wallace did a short walkabout while you were getting a shower. Found nothing of the sort."
"Unless they made it a habit to drag them off and leave them hanging," Wallace added.
"Yeah," Collie said, fixing on Gus once more. "You looking for someone out here?"
"Yeah, a woman and two kids."
"Wife?"
Gus shook his head.
"No, she's a friend. A doctor. Saved my life once. The kids are orphans. A couple of days ago, I lived on a farm outside of Annapolis. Long story short, I left it to do a job, and when I got back, the place had been torched, and most of the people I lived with were killed. Four of them were missing. I found one left on the side of a highway. I'm looking for the others."
The soldiers quieted at that information. Then Collie sniffed and moved in close.
"Lift up the sweater and shirt. I want to take a look at that cut again."
Gus didn't debate and complied.
"Yeah,"
she stretched the word out as she prodded the grisly cut.
"I can do something with it. Good news is it doesn't seem to be infected."
"That is good."
"Listen, I want you to shave your chest. At least the area around the edges of the slash. I've got some cloth bandages and a wad of duct tape. Not the best, but beggars can't be choosers. You get that shaved and I'll slap something on it to keep it clean for a while. But no heavy lifting for you. How's your hands and fingers?"
Gus held them out.
"They hurt."
"Yeah," Collie said. "That's just circulation restoring itself. How long they have you hanging?"
"A day. Overnight. Outside."
"It wasn't the warmest last night either, but it wasn't below zero. I don't see anything bad here. No frostbite or nip. You can move your hands and fingers okay?"
"Yeah, with some pain."
"Well, keep an eye on it. My guess is you'll be fine in a couple of hours."
"What are you going to do between now and then?" Gus asked.
Collie drew back and studied him with her unsettling eyes.
"Well, I think we'll take a look around for brunch first. Those IMPs are good for 5 years, and I saw a couple of boxes with curry written on the side. I don't know about you, but I'm fucking hungry."
With that, she finally took off her ski mask. Gus couldn't help but stare.
Chapter 22. Shovel sat and brooded, dividing his attention between the map of Ontario on his desk and the picture window at the end of the command trailer. The window offered a respectable view of the nearby mountain and the dismal digging efforts underway there. He sighed, filling his lungs with damp air, and glared at the slab of wilderness outside, feeling a wave of hopelessness rising inside. Distant shouts pierced the trailer's hide, piping above the constant grind of a working engine. Hard hats bobbed in front of the window, growing into workers carrying pickaxes and shovels and pushing wheelbarrows, heading toward the mouth of a cave, herded by armed guards wearing balaclavas. Shovel glanced at his watch and saw it was nearly 4 o'clock. Second shift was going in. He shook his head. It had taken almost 6 months to find Whitecap,
the secret bunker where the Canadian government had hunkered down to wait out the apocalypse, located north of the town of Cochrane, roughly 3 hours along Highway 574. Look for a crown of mountains, the dying and delirious spec op spook, a JTF-2 man, had revealed to him. A crown consisting of 5 peaks. Then watch the left side of the road for a sign that reads private property, hanging from a chain. Then another 2-hour drive over a dirt road that becomes asphalt. And straight on until dawn. Or so the fairy tale went. That sounded easy enough, but in reality it was a goddamn puzzle as elusive and mysterious as King Solomon's mines. Finding Highway 574 among the maze of backroads had been bad enough, and it wasn't made any easier by the fact that the road was a god-awful long one. Once they'd located the private property checkpoint, the Special Forces operative failed to tell them that the old road split into forks and split again. In fact, the roads branched off and ran all over the place, often nowhere, and several times the motorized convoy consisting of Shovel's little army found itself at a dead end, staring at rivers or blinded by thick forest. Upon making that first mistake of leading his people into a dead end, Shovel sent scouts ahead to check out all the other side roads. More time wasted. Even worse were the maddening glimpses of the 5 mountains between the treetops or just over the next hill, but several roads believed to lead to the bunker abruptly switched back and went in the opposite direction. Signs popped up at regular intervals, reminding them that they were trespassing upon government property and chanced being arrested. In the end, though, they found it, concrete checkpoints and all, right up to the promised land. However, the promised land wasn't in very good shape. That fact was another little gem of information the operator had neglected to divulge just before Shovel shot him between the eyes. Another mistake. But there was no way he was going to bring along a Special Forces operative just waiting to raise hell. Whitecap, the country's last bastion of civilization, wasn't the paradise they'd hoped it to be. Far from it. Shovel stood up and walked around his Spartan desk, clasping his hands behind his back. He carried himself well, despite being bulked up by bare hockey pads over his orange workman's uniform. His hair had thinned out considerably, but that was more from genetics than stress. The beard coating his chin grew unchecked, and he even entertained thoughts of twisting the ends into war braids, as the Norse savages did. Scars covered his face as if he might have been whipped by barbed wire at one time, while half of his left ear was missing entirely. His brown eyes bordered on black. Shovel stared through the glass at the Whitecap's imposing mountainside, an enormous, forested pyramid set in the middle of nowhere. He stooped just a little so he could see its top superimposed against heavenly blue. The scale of the installation was huge, according to the JTF-2 man,